Hey, you guys, and welcome to Steel Wars. I am Steel Saunders, and I do love Star Wars. And this is our special Saturday Night Live Chit Chat episode, Chapter 9. I always want to go episode, then I want to go on brand. I go with the Chapter 9, Season 2, The Marshal of the Mandalorian. A thrilling episode. A thrilling episode, and we have got a thrilling lineup of guests to bring it on with from the What the Force show. Returning guest, she came on as someone that joined the Star Wars fandom through The Last Jedi, and she won our hearts and our minds, and she's back. It is Hammy, how you doing, buddy? Actually, where is Hammy? There she is.
There. Hey, everyone. So excited to be back on Steel.
We have got the writer of Squadrons and Battlefront 2 also returning to the podcast. It's Mitch Dyer. How you doing, Mitchy D?
Good, man. I'm stoked to be back. And my cat is assassinating my desk behind me. I apologize.
Wow. It's an assassination. That's you don't see that often online, but we're here. Hey. From the Canto Bite Dispatch, it's your friend and mine. It's Emily Lind.
Hello.
And from the TV Black Box podcast in Australia, a very old podcasting buddy of mine. He is a well-known Australian TV aficionado. It is Steve Malk. How you doing, buddy?
Steele, all the better for being here. This is a bucket list moment. Thank you.
Excellent. And Malk assures me, if you check out his background right now, that that curtain haphazardly hanging there isn't just for the show. It's a permanent fixture in his designer lifestyle. So thank you, Steve Malk. I appreciate that.
That old hunk of junk.
We have got a blazing hyper chat going on. Hello, everyone. Timothy Dunlop says he's one of our biggest supporters, so his word is gospel. What a treat. Didn't expect that, and that is in reference to the return of Hammy.
Hi, Timothy.
So you win the treat award, if there is an award. Apparently there is. Now, this episode, The Marshal, from the time they dropped the name, and a lot of Star Wars fans knew what that meant, that we would be getting Cobb Vance. The rumors were true. Up until the final shot, and we don't want to bury the lead on this, Tem Morrison returning as a grizzled, maybe a bit cloned out Boba Fett. Mitch, how did you ride with this one, buddy?
I admit that I came into this maybe a little bit cynical about Boba Fett. Like, I'm not a Boba Fett person. This show has made me a Mandalorian person. I was never really into Mandalorian history and lore and all the stuff that people love. Great. It was never for me. I never connected with it. This show is bringing me into elements of Star Wars, like the pieces of Star Wars that I was like, okay, like, That's like the one piece of Star Wars that I don't really care about. And it's really making me care. So I came in cynical. I didn't really want Boba Fett back. I didn't really think doing the, like, somebody else is wearing his armor stuff would be cool and interesting. And this episode kind of proved all of it wrong. Like, by the end of it, I'm like, what's been going on with Boba Fett? He looks so sad. What has that guy's life been like for 7 years? He's just fully withered by the desert, worn down by time. What's going on with poor Boba, man?
You like walk past him in the mall and you're like, what's wrong? Smile. You look like you've been eaten by a giant desert worm. Like, come on.
Smile.
Grow some eyebrows, buddy. Lift yourself up. I'm with you, Mitch. I wasn't sort of too into the whole different Bobas, like the guy that was going to be wearing the Boba outfit. And I don't know, it just didn't catch me. But how it was executed. And as we always say on the podcast, quite often, quite cynically, hey, if they do it right, then anything's going to be good. And when you've got this.
Unbelievable.
On screen. Whoa.
So good.
You are doing it right. Hammy, how did it hit you, buddy?
I was similar to Mitch. You know, I came into, for those who are watching, I am a new Star Wars fan. So I've only been a Star Wars fan for about, it'll be 3 years in January. I came in as a sequel trilogy fan. So a lot of the references, that kind of thing, it just doesn't jive with myself and a lot of sequel trilogy fans. You know, nostalgia doesn't really hit us because we don't have nostalgia. But I will say, I agree also with Mitch that Boba, they kind of won me over because he kind of represents a way to connect to the rest of the saga. So, you know, with Baby Yoda and the Force, that's the stuff that I usually like, all of the Force stuff. And so here now we have somebody who's experienced all of that leading up to now. And he doesn't, you know, the Mando himself doesn't really know much about the Force or what's going on. So it kind of, I'm hoping maybe will be a link to all of that, to the past and what's happened.
Yeah, I definitely...
Yeah,
it sort of blends it all together in such an exciting way. Like it, like quite often the connections, I'm pretty like, nah, but I don't know. They just managed to, like, even stuff like doing the single file banthers. I put up this, yeah. I because I'm me, I videoed myself watching the first episode, and I finally worked out a way to defeat YouTube copyright restrictions to get it up, and like. Just seeing the banthers in single file, I literally shelled out, single file, yes!
Dude, I did the same thing. I leaned over to my girlfriend. I'm like, just like in the movie.
Just like in the movie.
Now, Steve Malk, you as a, you know, you're a television reviewer. And I'm sure you're looking at it with a very critical eye on acting and all that sort of stuff. What did you make of it, buddy?
Look, definitely on the second watch, Steel, I cast a very serious kind of discerning eye across it. The first episode was the biggest fanboy stuff I could get. I was in. I was loving it. There was sort of little squeaks and shouts and hoorays and all sorts of things running through the episode. I was really impressed. I mean, this for me was Star Wars really just heavily hooking back into its past, as in the Mandalorian hooking into that with not just the introduction of Boba right at the end, but as you noticed, you know, the single file stuff, the talk of the Sarlacc, the reveal of Boba Fett's armor, all of that stuff really kept us in. And this was that intergalactic cowboy Western kind of vibe, just writ large. We're back on Tatooine. We've got a marshal who's here to clean up this town. He does that gig. It's just delightful to watch.
That was quite a paragraph. I was like, woof. Did you script all that? That was amazing.
No, I'm ready to go now.
Yeah, no, you really hit. I felt like I was listening to your podcast there because you got into your rhythm. Emily Lind. Now, you never know which way the wind's going to blow in Lind Town. How did you go, buddy?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Look, as soon as I saw the title of this episode, because I know the titles had come out, but I didn't, like, I purposely avoided them. And so the first time I saw the title come up and it was the Marshal, I immediately knew it was going to be Timothy Oliphant as a space sheriff. And as a huge fan of both Deadwood and Justified, I could not be more excited. And I thought it was a really fun episode. You know, I had gone in thinking I wanted mythology and I wanted Moff Gideon, but instead I really liked this. It sort of slows everything down. Like Malk said, it's such a Western episode. Like, even when he's first coming into the town and you're going by all the townspeople, like giving him the side eye. And I love how quickly they dispose of the idea that he's Boba Fett. Like instant, like the fact that the armor doesn't fit him.
Yeah. Oh. Amazing.
It's so good. And it, like, as soon as he takes it off and like the helmet and so I only found this out through Twitter, but the bartender in the scenes with Cobb Vanth is played by W. Orl Brown, who is also from Deadwood. And please, please, please go on his Twitter and look at his threads. One thing that's interesting is apparently he shot his stuff starting like 2 days before season one started airing.
Ah.
So he had no idea who Baby Yoda was. But he's
Yoju, if you will.
He's a huge Star Wars fan, and he has a whole tweet about like how excited he was that he got to touch a Bantha, and it's the most adorable thing. No, this episode was like, it made me remember why I love Star Wars, which I needed.
Yes, it was a celebration of, I don't know, just the references were like on paper, it should disgust me. But experience, I just felt like it was just fun. And I thought it was very smart to do this episode first because it's essentially, especially if you've already seen the original trilogy, it's like a standalone episode. Yeah. So if you have heard all the hype and you catch this first episode, you don't have to watch the first season to really get up to speed with like what happens. It's a pretty basic story. And I just felt like they were just setting off Star Wars fireworks and it was just stunning. Cobb Vanth, where are we at? Big fans?
I loved him. I love Timothy Olyphant, man. Like, I named one of my cats. One of my cat's names is Raylan Givens. Like, I love this dude. I love everything he's in. He's awesome. A beautiful specimen of a man, and he knows exactly the show he's in. He knows exactly the role he's playing. He knows exactly the part he needs to play, and he's doing it to a T, right? He's kind of a goofball. He's a bit of a dork. He thinks he's really badass, but he kind of is, and he kind of isn't.
I like in the end how they were both too. I always like characters when they've got like a stiff moral. Like they do whatever, but a deal's a deal. Their word is their word. And I sort of really appreciated the way once they organized the deal, he handed over the Mandalorian armor sort of, you know, without question. And I thought that was super cute, super cool.
You tell your people I didn't break it.
Yeah. Dude, if you watch this video, when he makes the Cobb go up, and it's like this callback to Jedi. I was just like, callback!
That was the one that stood out where I was like, oh no. Like, less of this, more of everything else you're doing with like references to push your own story forward. It's great.
As I say, on paper, I should hate it. But yeah. I was just on the roller coaster. I was on the roller coaster. Hammy, what do you make with all our just like infatuation with all these references to a film we saw 30 years ago? Oh, is Hammy still?
She might be.
There she is.
Sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
I was like, she's very stoic when she listens. Like you like we were dead still. And I'm like, man, that's she must not drink.
Sorry about that. I think my internet might've cut out for a second.
I was like, she does not drink any coffee. That's amazing how she can just stand still like that. But do you find it?
No, sorry.
Do you find
about
it
that
amusing how like thrilled I am with a reference to a film from years ago?
No, like I understand. I understand like why everyone would get excited. So that's fine because obviously I have other fandoms that I'm part of and that I would get excited for. But I think after The Rise of Skywalker, I think a lot of sequel trilogy fans are craving something new. But I will say that this episode was a good jump in. You were mentioning that this first episode is good if you're coming into Mandalorian. There's a lot of hype. I think there's a lot of people who aren't as big Star Wars fans who are watching The Mandalorian. They love Baby Yoda, and so they're watching for him and that kind of thing. So I think this first episode was kind of a good introduction to get people back into it. Oh, okay, remember all of this stuff that you love. But I think they're also maybe laying the groundwork for future storytelling with this season, that we're going to go somewhere else with it. It's not just Easter eggs for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I very humbly tweeted out yesterday, I think, about, like, remember when I said by the end of season two, there'll be no filler episodes in season one. And that's five. Some grumpy tuckus had to go, what wasn't filler about whatever. But like, this is what I want out of Star Wars television is, you know, episode five, there's a hint at this character, and then the first episode of the next season, I now know who that character is, and I'm delighted. It's sort of, and it's exactly who they hinted at. Like, they put in the sound effects. I wasn't ready for the emotions I would have to use against David Filoni if he used those two Boba Fett sound effects in episode five, The Gunslinger starring Toro Calcan, and then not come through with the goods. That would, but like, sometimes the best surprise is they did exactly what you wanted. And like, we'll go through it, but I'll hit the opening sort of set piece. And that is the Gamorrean Fighting Championships. We get to see vibro axes in action. This is one of the classic sort of promo scenes that seems pretty good, but then when you see the full cut in the episode, a lot like that episode in The Office from the first one, as it plays out, it's like so much better, and there's so many, like, and it's almost like the beats that weren't in like the lines about gambling and stuff, when they said that, I was like, oh, new lines that are funny.
This episode was really funny, man. Like, the first time you see the crate dragon and it comes out and you think it's gonna go for that bantha and it goes for the Tusken instead, slayed me.
Yep.
And as Lauren says, you can play the Toro drinking game. Every time you mention Toro, everyone drink. I think Emily plays that game unintentionally, but it's more of a self-care thing. Mm. Sorry. We've got a tradition here, and we do have Noah Outlaw in the chat. So I'm going to have to play the video. Sorry, everyone. This is big. In the chat right now, Star Wars insider, Noah Outlaw.
Oh, no.
Noah Van Outlaw.
Here we go.
Is in the chat.
Here we go.
Noah Van Outlaw is in the chat. Very exciting. Sorry, guys. That's Star Wars insider, Noah Outlaw. He's in the chat. So we just had to acknowledge that is one of our traditions. Anyone have any thoughts on the Gamorrean fighting championship scene?
I thought it was really great. I thought that opening set piece again kind of mirrored the opening set piece we got from season one. You know, in that here's kind of the, if you, like you guys have intimated, if you haven't seen it, here's who the Mandalorian is. He's a pretty full-on kind of guy. There was some, like, even just talking about the comedy beats in it, you know, Mitch Steele, you guys acknowledged, at one point in the fight, like, one of the guys punches him in the helmet and it knocks him back a bit. And then the next time, or the second or third time, he leans his helmet into it to, like, actually hurt the guy. And it is just those kinds of lovely touches that help round out, fill out some of those character things for someone who we don't get to see emote. It is all physical acting and excellent script writing in that process. Of course, the lovely touches around the child, you know, closing his capsule to make sure he's protected the minute he sees the little missiles come out. And I absolutely loved that follow through once we got outside and he's captured John Leguizamo's character and strung him up and I thought it was completely foreboding when it says, "I promise you won't die by my hand." And I went, "Oh man, you are dead, dude."
Yeah, when he shot the light off, I was like, "Is he going to electrocute him? Is he, because he's got one eye? He's really scared of the dark. Like, what is that?" But Mitch, you're like you're deep into the lore, having written these stories. Do you know about these dark rats?
I thought they were the same dogs that we see like chewing on a bone in Attack of the Clones at the Tusken camps.
I thought
it was like a literal like feed him to the wolves thing. And then later in the Tusken camps in this episode, we see like they're like kind of the hyenas that Mando's all friendly with and he can speak to. Like, I thought it was just those. But they're not on Tatooine in the beginning, I think. Like,
yeah,
I think
you're calling it. So.
So I don't know. Maybe it's not those things.
But it's something with the like they're nocturnal or something, because I think that's why he hit the light, right? So then they would be able to see him.
And we almost needed
I thought they were the maybe the dogs from Solo, from Corellia. I'm not as good with the lore, so I thought it looked like that, but I don't know. I guess the graffiti, I don't know if we've ever seen it anywhere other than with Sabine and in Rebels. I don't know.
Yeah, I was gasping at a bit of graffiti. There was a C-3PO head.
100% C-3PO head.
Yeah, and they looked like a no snow troopers.
Mm.
And I was like, yeah, those little dresses they have out the back are pretty lame, so I can go with that.
Oh, I love those little butt capes thing.
Never. They always broke when you were little.
Did you know that one of the cast did that graffiti?
One
of the bit player. No, they apparently will work. They just said, "Hey, you know, you want some graffiti? What about this?" And took a thing and drew it up. And went, yeah, let's do that.
Did he get in much trouble?
I think he was welcomed to.
Ah, okay, sorry. I live in LA. Well,
thanks for clearing that up, though. I appreciate it.
Okay, we've got a super chat from the Sex Wedge, which is the best type of wedge I've heard. Just drink, no Toro Calican needed. So there you go. There's your own drinking game. Just drink. That's fine. And Lauren says, love to see Mando show off more of his bounty skills. I did love the, it's like poetry, it's all connected. It rhymes. Of him doing the exact same way that he captured the, whatever it was, the squid head or whatever in the first.
The mithril, I think, or yeah.
No, it wasn't the mithril, because this guy, whoever, because he got chopped in half by the door.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's not a good sign. If he gets you by the legs like that, it's he's prepared to do whatever. But with the wrestling scene and then that sort of standoff and then that, how it then went into, oh, we're off to Tatooine, ba-ba-ba, ba-ba-ba-ba, and then the Razor Crest. I was just like, yes, this is what it's about. I was just beyond thrilled by the power of the opening dip. And then we head back to Tatooine, and I'll bring up the next little scene. As this was my next giant pop of the episode, and that is Amy Sidakis returning. I was just like, yes, she's back. She's already, for me, a beloved Star Wars character. So, Emily, were you happy to see her return? Oh, Emily's got the stills now as well. What is going on with the
stills?
Lindo.
Normally these technical things really bother me, but they appear to be not due to me or affecting me. So that's fine. But we do have traditions on the show, and because of this, I do have to put up the 0 days without a technical accident thing. So maybe I'll just remove window and see if I can bring her back. Nah, we lost her. Amy Sidakis.
She'll be back.
What did you think, Malt?
Oh, look, it was marvelous. That callback to see that clearly Mando and her have developed that friendship. You know, the acknowledgement straight away when the pit droids came out, she was like, you know, he doesn't like your kind. And then he says, oh, they better give it a look over. So straight away, he's obviously cooled his jets a little bit on droids and he's okay with it, lets them at it. And then she says a line, I'm going to botch it. But when she's talking, oh, have you got the little womp rat? No, you give him a cuddle and whatever with the child. And she said, what is it, if he duplicates or, you know, has a, like, basically, if there's another one of him, I'll pay you for it. Not really, but seriously. Like, the fact that she's just taken by the cuteness of the child is phenomenal. It's so great.
She knows how to hold a baby Yoda Yoju, if you will. She, she loves little Yoju.
Oh, the only official Yoju babysitter.
And just in, big scoop here, Emily Lynn, sorry all, my laptop froze. So there you go. There you go. And again, as it turns out, these technical issues, when it's not my fault, I find them kind of amusing. So there we go. We're just showing what sort of person I am at the moment. But
I respect that level of transparency, Steele.
I've just had, Mitch, I've just had so many that are my fault that
I understand.
Hey, Malk, what show for people that want to find out more about Amy Sedaris, what should they be watching?
There's a show right now that she's running called At Home with Amy Sedaris. That is really funny, that kind of comedic kind of, you know, sketch but not sketch kind of thing. That I think she's streaming, or it's popping up on some kind of like in a dual place. I can't remember. I can't recall because it hasn't officially made it to Australia yet. But that's sort of,
just point out how the local slang, when someone says it hasn't officially made it to Australia yet, that means I got it illegally. That's just
found a way.
Yeah, it's there was, yeah. So that's I'm just teaching everyone how to, it's not just all g'day mates and shrimp on the barbie. There's also our fierce tradition of internet piracy. So
an excellent pickup from Aaron Taylor. She's also on BoJack Horseman. So if you want to check that out, Amy.
Yeah, I love BoJack Horseman.
top notch voice actor there.
And Michael Knitt points out Strangers with Candy.
She's everywhere.
I've never watched that, but it was when I was getting pay TV back in, I don't know, the 2000s, that was so heavily advertised on the Comedy Channel on Foxtel, and it kind of scared. I just was like, oh, no, I can't watch that today. It just seemed too full on. Like, I think I had a hangover a lot of that time, and it felt like it was going to make it worse. Hammy, were you happy to see the return?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. And I think someone in the chat mentioned it, but my favorite part was that she said, thank the Force. Steele knows that I love the Force, so any kind of mention to that or hint at it that we're gonna get more Force stuff is always makes me happy. So and I was surprised that Mando wasn't like, hey, what is that? Because, you know, the whole first season he's like, well, the baby can do this weird thing with his hands, I don't know what's up with that. So it was nice to actually hear the word Force in Mandalorian.
Yeah, well, that's what sealed the deal for me with The Mandalorian at the end of the first episode, season one, mm-hmm. to have Yoju introduced and just like, oh, the Force is involved with this in such a new and unique way. I was like, yes. Like,
yeah.
But I love this scene because what The Mandalorian, I think, does so well is take all the pieces of Star Wars and go, shh, and then throw them out. And to have this bit of pure George Lucas comedy of the pit droid getting vacuumed in the face.
Yeah.
Yes.
Full prequel humor going on in the background. It's perfect. Yeah.
And the best end of prequel humor as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, who knows what was going on at the other end of that banth that was getting its teeth brushed. Do you know what I mean? And George Lucas may have wanted to show us. Who knows? Who knows? But
and I was going to say, just another great connection as we see here, and I'm sure we'll probably get to it, but when we see Cobb and the vehicle that he's, you know, riding, flying, when they go to visit the home of the Krayt Dragon in the first instance, it's like I had full flashbacks to episode one, like full.
Mm-hmm.
So they get... on the speeder, which I was immediate. Oh, wait, here we go. How's this for? I'm taking a few photos as we go, and get ready for this one, Hammy.
Okay.
Yes.
Look at him.
Real good.
Look at those little teeth.
Mm. Yeah, there's teeth. And the hard work they've obviously put into to the puppet to make the ears flap as well as it did. Like that's full practical effects.
Yeah, watching this back, I'm remembering all the things I yelled. And it, during this scene, Malk, it was ears, ears.
Absolutely.
Watching this, I just reverted. Like normally, I'm aiming for 12 years old. That's where you want to be when you watch Star. You want to hit a 12-year-old mentality and just go on a trip. That's what it is for me. But sometimes my reactions are a bit like my 2-year-old son, where I just yell out key words out of Now, we've got an extra guest joining us. Very excited. Our friend from the Kessel Run Transmissions. It's my boy, Corey Van Dyke. How are you doing? Why are you shaking your head like that?
I'm not. I'm just, you know, thinking. What's going on, man?
You're just thinking, no, 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 no.
I just know why I'm in here, what I have to present. So it's already, you know.
Okay. Well,
I have to show you.
Do you want to wait till it comes up in the show? Or do you have to do it now?
I can wait.
Okay. All right.
Good restraint.
Corey, what was your initial thoughts over this episode?
Well, let me tell you, it was an exciting time, first and foremost, to watch it because I watched it with two of my best buds. I had Claire Stribling over here, and of course Noah Outlaw with me as always, and we were watching it all together. And our reactions quite literally woke up people in the apartment complex.
Good.
So it was awesome. Obviously, you know, seeing Boba Fett in the flesh again, Temuera Morrison, was literally like a dream. So, and I still can't get over that's a real thing. So, it was a solid start to the season. I think the best way you could start it. And yeah, I loved it. It's great.
There's something about having, like, I could go either way, but I actually, in the end, love it. Like having essentially three Boba Fetts in play.
You're right.
Like, that is just insane. And that's what just makes it so exciting is, like, not only is Boba Fett alive, he's in this, like, he's in play as a character. Like, you don't know where he can take it. I've got this I have to show everyone because I personally love Star Wars for how happy it makes people. And this, like people that are into sports, they get to yell loudly a lot more than us. And it's more socially acceptable. And I'm trying to wreck that stigma because look at this three on the bench here. As Corey, Noah, and Claire. And that is some World Series winning. It's all their heads are different shapes than they normally are.
There's several different emotions happening too. Like everybody's feeling something different.
Oh yeah.
I don't understand how Corey's head got bigger and Noah's got smaller. It's very odd.
You lean back.
Okay, it's all perspective. Is that real sets practical effects?
Exactly. Yep.
Everything's different.
Everything's the same, but nothing's the same. It's how you want it to be, really. It's about family, and that's what makes it so powerful. You got it.
Oh, my, that's Claire on the end, isn't it? Sorry, Claire? On the end of that picture?
Yeah, she's
ready to eat someone alive. She is so happy. She just is ready to, like, it's Sarlacc moment. She's ready to devour someone and just ingest them and dissolve them over hundreds of years.
You could really Sithize that up and get a whole different vibe to what's going.
Oh,
yeah.
Ah, Corey, are you ready for your next internet feud?
I guess.
Check the comments. Wow. Lindo. Got replaced by Corey.
Sorry, Emily.
Lindo.
Wow. Did I really? Did I really take Emily's place?
Emily, it's her phone, her laptop. There's still a space. It's not like she's not taking. This is the thing, Emily. This is what you got to learn about the United States of America. He's not taking your place. There's pie for everyone here. All right, this is a great country. So I'm sorry you're acting like that, Emily. You've really disappointed me.
She now knows what it feels like to be most Star Wars directors. So,
Oh wow! Oh my god! Right like that. Wow!
Sorry.
Wow, that is shot fired. I feel like we're gonna have to do. I feel like we're gonna have to do a vibe check.
Okay,
what's a vibe check?
That is a major vibe check.
I'm majorly checked right now.
There we go. So,
yep.
Love the vibe check. Now, I'm just then he gets to the little village, and that whole shot of him going through, like, it's obviously calls back to old. Like it was almost like a parody of a Western. Like a family, it was so heavily painted on, but I loved every minute of it. Like how high it was turned up. What did you make of the village and the reveal, Hammy? Like while I was like I was seriously like, like when they said, why don't you just ask him or whatever? And Cobb Vanth was there. How did you, like, without all that, you know, like 20
build
years
up of 40 years.
Yeah.
As a newer fan, I kind of knew it was coming because I had been spoiled a little bit, but I didn't know it was happening in this episode. So it was still, you know, surprising. I did feel, I love all of the Western motifs that they're using. It's kind of cool because they mix Western motifs with mythology and fairy tales. I think Emily wants to be let back into the room. I think she's waiting to be let back in.
No, she's not. I've got, oh, she's down. Oh, I'm so sorry. Listen, I don't know how to point this out with, so I'll take a photo and then no, because I just have to have evidence because Emily will not believe me unless I've got this. Because see, look, Emily, I'll show you. See, I couldn't see your little window. You mm-hmm. weren't there, but then you were down there on the next level.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Hammy.
I'm sorry. I tried to get you in. good. We're good now.
There's a lot of there's a big, huge movement in the chat at the moment here. So
that's nice for my ego.
Okay. All right. Sorry, Hammy, can you go back to your thoughts?
Yeah, no problem. Well, I was commenting on two things.
Emily's self-importance got in the way. Sorry.
No. We want her, everyone included. No, it's fine. No, but I was commenting on both of your points. The Western, I love that it's the Western motifs, but also paired with the mythology. You know, later we'll get to it going into the belly of the beast. It's cool that it combines both of those aspects because that's what makes it Star Wars, right? To be able to pull from different genres and kind of meld it all together. But for the big reveal that it was Timothy Oliphant under, you know, the armor, that was a really fun surprise. So I actually didn't know about the multiple Bobas. So that was really cool. Yeah, that was really surprising to like watch. And it was kind of reassuring. I know I've mentioned it before, but it's kind of reassuring as a newer fan that, okay, we're doing something different. There are still surprises to be had for all of the viewers.
So when he sort of explained his backstory and how he got the armor and like, did that all sort of make sense? Because I think I was just like yelling during that bit with joy. But did that make sense?
I mean, you have to buy into it, right? Like every part of Star Wars you have to buy into. But yeah, it made sense, sure.
but it's interesting because it's also, narratively, I think the one and only, maybe aside from Last Jedi, the one and only flashback in Star Wars I can think of where it's like somebody telling you what happened, right? It's like, here's his version of the story. And maybe he's full of it. But he also doesn't paint himself in like a really flattering or interesting way where he runs away and then he steals all the stuff and then he's like, he passes out in the desert because he can't survive and he gets picked up and he's just like, I don't know, give me the armor, I'm out of here. Like, if he's spinning a yarn, it's not a particularly good one.
It was sort of like the Tatooine version of Dude, Where's My Car?
Right. Right.
But this shot, that was when I was just...
I burst out laughing.
Laughing, like, happiness or ridiculous? Or...
It was both, because I was like, okay, like... They're doing like Boba Fett is back, whether it's literally him or not. But it was just, it looks like someone wearing his dad's clothes. Like they don't fit. He's not the right fit. Yeah, it's like he's Timothy Olyphant, right? He's the tallest drink of water there is, and he still can't fit into that armor.
How did it hit you, Corey?
Well, it was it was before this moment. It was the moment where the title card came up and it said the Marshal. Yes. And that's when I made the connection that it was really Cobb Vanth. But yeah, when I first saw this, kind of to what Mitch was just saying, that's kind of how I felt too. I was like, whoa, that's a look. That is a look. And but seeing the Boba Fett armor, again, just feels surreal because even though it was teased last season, you know, now you're like, wow. There's a dude walking around in Boba's armor. How would he feel about that? And it's just, it's such a big payoff too for all of us who like read the books and play the games and read the comics, because now one of those characters are quite literally in like one of the number one shows streaming wise of all time. It's just, it's mind blowing to me. And there he is.
All right. Now I'm trying to get this image up of what it reminded me of. Wait, stop screen sharing.
Well, while you're getting that up, Steel.
Yeah, mate. Just
that response, it was interesting for me. I was in. It did look like it was a kid wearing his dad's clothes, which is what I think was the great touch in that. My 15-year-old son, when he first watched it, went, where did he get it from? And then when we saw the Jawa reveal, he went, where did they get it from? You know, like it was that straight, it's just drawing us into the story, getting us, and then we get that, you know, marvelous little road trip off to the Sarlacc pit, and the acknowledgement of how that all sort of rounds out. And I just sort of turned and went, well, see, that's how they got it, right? That happens. Not even connecting that, you know, over thousands of years, maybe, still alive, bounty hunters and survivors, right?
Something I did love, too, is they call out specifically, like they insinuate pretty heavily that the Krayt Dragon ate the Sarlacc.
Yeah.
Which was just a throwaway line. And they've been doing more and more of this where it's like, oh, you killed Aurra Sing. And I'm like, well, oh, okay. Like, I guess that's just what happened now. I guess that's the world we live in, is the Krayt Dragons are just eating Sarlaccs.
Do you guys think that when the next Krayt Dragon eventually, you know, enters Star Wars and on Tatooine, he'll just, like, eat the Skywalker sabers and everything that's in the ground at this point? It's all done.
Eat Shmi. Everything just
I forgot. Yeah,
in the graveyard out back.
Yeah, she'd be down there getting all pickled by now. It'd be delicious, like turkey bacon. But this is what Cobb Vanth, when he walked in, this is what it reminded me of. Was he was like in Boba Fett underoos pajamas?
Totally.
That was right up the alley. But there was this shot as well, which, like, I just feel like they're just like, I feel like this episode is what our friend Hawes would be gushing about 8 years ago, the day he found out that Disney bought Star Wars and they're going to make TV shows. Like, it's just like, and then Boba Fett can meet like Jodo Cast, and like Jodo Cast was this other sort of fake wannabe Boba Fett, that they're kind of doing like a sort of like how Marvel sort of remixes a lot of, you know, like the Civil War storyline and stuff. They are taking things and shifting it around and they are fitting in, but it's not as sort of direct.
Yeah, it's not as one-to-one as it was before.
Yeah. Like even in The Rise of Skywalker, there was stuff that you know, and sometimes people, just by its very nature, are against it. But it's sort of like, well, if it's good, or how many different stories are there? There's going to be some stuff. But this image was just like, it hit me and I was like, this is some iconic action right here. Just chilling in the bar.
Yeah.
All Mando'd up. Mando's drink free on Monday at at the Skiff Guards. At the Skiff, is it a weekway?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. All right. Sorry, everyone. I'll have to leave. I'll have to Emily myself.
One of the things I liked this episode did is like, because there were so many people sort of like harumphing back when the rumors about Cobb Vanth being on started of like, oh, that's too like deep of a cut and nobody's going to know who he is. And I'm like, but no, you explained who he is on the show because it's a TV show. And that's what you do when you introduce any new character, whether he exists in some other like form of media or not. You introduce him and then everybody knows who he is and it's fine. And that turned out to be how it was.
And the show is telling its own story. So it doesn't have to tell the story that the book already did and filling in on all that. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I
think that duality is really nice. Like, no matter what level of fan you are, that you can jump into the story whenever you want, and you can dig into it more if you want. But otherwise, I agree with you, Emily. They did a really good job of introducing his character.
And also, he looks like this.
Oh, don't. Steel, I am 100% cisgendered heterosexual male, and seeing him take off the helmet and that, something stirred inside me, man.
Kinsey Steel toppled onto the floor.
So great.
If they do not announce a Cobb Vanth action figure on Mando Monday this week, I am going to be livid.
On Cobb on his Anakin Skywalker swoop bike. Thank you very much. Yeah. That would be sick. But it's so weird because I videoed, so I know all my reactions. When he came on, I was like, I just went dashing. as Gabriella says, very succinctly, that's a bloody specimen right there. Where are you from, Gabriella? Because that reads quite Australian. So, hey to you.
Lifestyles is what that is.
How does he have that hair after that helmet is on? It's so beautiful.
Oh, solid point.
It's a force.
I mean, that's not a complaint. I think it's just the power of Timothy Olyphant.
Oh, this is the force, wills it?
That's it. It's the power of Cobb. Just takes the helmet off, hair perfect. There you go. Here we go.
Yeah, is Din Djarin the only Star Wars character who takes off his helmet and his hair is all messed up? Because I can't think of anyone else who's done that.
Well, you'd have to say that Anakin's hair was pretty messed up when he took his helmet off after the battle with Luke.
I would definitely say so.
I mean, I don't want to be, you know, that guy.
I did like that parallel, though. This is going back to season one, but when Din Djarin's laying down and the helmet comes off, it did feel very, like a callback to that moment. Yeah.
See, I called it. Where did her comment go? Yes, there you go. I'm an Aussie. I can read Australian. Don't worry about it.
I also think it's a dude.
Oh, really?
Gabriel instead of Gabrielle.
I apologize if it's not.
Well, I think whoever they should leave their options open. So
maybe they are.
Because let's find out what Cobb's into and we'll work our way into that. I think he's into hair products, just quietly.
Blow dryers.
I'd be getting Mos Pelgo.
Sex Wedge has super chatted us with the comment, "That hair." So that's money well spent, buddy. And the report is in, I am a man. So we know it's an Australian man we've got on our hands here.
And he is a bloody specimen. That's right.
Oh, wow.
I appreciate all the comments saying that Kylo has magic hair too. I agree with that.
Oh, yeah.
And then we blow some special effects budget.
Oh, yes, we do.
This is what they're doing so well, is they're finding things that I never knew I wanted to see. And then they are showing me. And then I am applauding. So I had no interest in seeing a crate dragon. I thought it was just, you know, it's quite often, I feel like we've all been burnt through just the heavy references and stuff. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm just blind to it because I just enjoy the episode or what, but it just seems smooth and soothing references. What do you reckon, Corey?
Well, it's horrifying. That's for sure. I also think it's cool that we kind of have a Godzilla type Star Wars monster going on there. And actually Charlie Ashby in the chat as well mentioned this to me yesterday, how he kind of has like Zillow Beast vibes to him, which I definitely think is accurate. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but somebody made a hilarious video of the crate dragon as he's opening his mouth, and they inserted the Ben Kenobi line from A New Hope where he screams, and like from the special editions. And it's just not accurate at all, but it's hilarious.
You can hear that in the episode very faintly when the dragon screams. Really? Like it's genuinely in the mix. You can hear that, like, cool.
Wow.
Yes, yeah.
That's great.
I didn't catch it. My girlfriend pointed it out, and it was like another classic moment of like from the movie.
That's what this show does so well is putting all those in very subtly, but enough for us to catch them occasionally. That's great.
Now,
and it's fun too, right? Like it's not consequential stuff. Like it doesn't matter at all. None of the like callbacks and stuff really matter for what's happening.
Yeah,
but for dorks like us,
we'll pick up on, right? That's awesome.
I actually just realized something about this image that I have up here. Oh, okay, I never got that, but I will talk about it now. But speaking of dorks getting references. This one was so unnecessary, so out of left field, and so welcomed, and that's Cobb's Pod Racer swoop bike, which I actually thought he was riding it on top, but it's actually a side saddle type deal. Did anyone not like this?
I was in. I thought it was a great callback.
It's awesome. I love it. It's like repurposing a Pod Racer engine to become a swoop bike is such a brilliant concept. And like it feels very Star Wars that like I found this stuff out back and I built something out of it.
Oh, I'm very connected. You got me.
Honestly, it like goes with the whole idea of like the armor not fitting him. Like it's this sort of like janky thing that he has.
I mean, they live in Mos Pelgo, right? As was determined, we saw in that conversation back when he first landed the crest. Like, no one knows where Mos Pelgo is. It's miles out of nowhere. It used to be here, and now it's gone. So the people that do manage to live there are just scavs and trading everything. So for him to have, whether he traded it or he found it or whatever, it's just this perfect fit into the universe of, you know, out here, we just turn everything into everything else.
Yeah, I just started laughing because Malk said, you go hammy. So my eyes went down to hammy. And then I'm like, she's frozen again.
Sorry.
God, she sounds like Emily. And then I looked, Emily's like on the other side. And then I was just like, I've been on a wild goose chase trying to find guests now. I thought that was so cool. Corey, has anyone customed this up yet? Because, you know, you could grab a episode one Anakin Pod Racer and start banging this together. Has anyone done that yet?
Yeah, I saw it this morning, actually. Out of Lego. Someone made one out of Lego, which is cool.
Cobb, I'm finding this. You guys gush amongst yourselves.
Well, actually, I mean, I think the Anakin, if that is Anakin's Pod Racer part, it's a really cool nod to obviously his character, but also the significance of that particular race on Tatooine when, you know, in Phantom Menace, or it's just a, you know, reproduced part of Anakin's pod. Cause that's clearly the same, you know, color scheme. Do you think that it's actually Anakin's or you think maybe it's just an offshoot?
I just saw someone in the chat, Rob G in the chat, saying that he likes the idea that because Anakin won that race, everybody just started making that model of pod racer to start winning races. Yeah. And I think that's brilliant. I love that. Yeah. That's what I believe now.
Yeah. Yeah. Either way, I don't know. I just feel like when, for me anyway, when the story's so good, or it's, you know, to me, I'm just so, like, I wonder if Ponda Barber walked through a scene, if I'd just be like, hey guys, Ponda Barber's back. Yes, it's all connected. Or I'd be rational. But I didn't feel very rational. I cannot find that. Corey, if you can, if you know where that is, I'd love to show it. But otherwise.
Yeah, I don't think, I saw it on Twitter earlier.
Ah, okay.
I'm trolling Reddit for you now. It's got to be there somewhere.
Well, you guys are scouring the internet. I'd love to know, Hammy and Lindo, they're on their bikes, they're heading to the place, and they come into the canyon, and then Cobb pulls up sort of a bit sharp, forces Mando to get off, and this is where we see these, you know, like the Tuscan dogs or hyenas, whatever. I don't know their name, I apologize. And at that point, like when I first saw it, they're dead. They are cooked. And then, of course, it made sense that with... because we know Mando is able to speak Tuscan and you know, works with them. For them, him to be able to, you know, calm the dogs and they come over and sort of pat. It was just this glorious moment that my brain was like, of course that happens. Of course that's how it works for him. What'd you think?
I love with the anything with the Tuscan Raiders in... Oh, sorry. I apologize.
Okay, it's your podcast, mate. It's fine.
Anyway... I like that anytime the Tusken Raiders are in the Mandalorian, that I get to wonder if a certain group of people should know they should be very angry about this or not. Like, I love like all the messages about, you know, the Tusken Raiders' point of view to the settlers and stuff, how it was, you know, their land and all that sort of stuff. It's very. I don't know, some nice subtle things. But whoever was meant to answer that question, I'm going to sidle away because I was pulling up the next picture. There's a lot of stuff going on here, right?
It's okay. It's good. We're all good.
There's live, there's streaming. It's Emily was down there before. Just I'm just going to have a rest over here, okay?
Well, I was going to say to kind of bring all of this together with possibly, you know, Anakin's swoop bike model, and then also the dogs that were in Attack of the Clones, and then what you had just mentioned with the Tusken Raiders, and then kind of humanizing them. I think that it's also kind of my first impression was like a callback to the symbiote conversation from Phantom Menace as well, that you know, you have the people, the humans of Naboo, and then the Gungans, and they have to work together. So this whole episode just kind of felt very prequel-esque in that way. It wasn't just, of course, we get the original trilogy references, but I really, really appreciated that they were kind of linking all of the trilogies together. We didn't get too much sequel trilogy, but I'm waiting for it. I'm hoping we get something, maybe a baby Ben Solo later or something like that.
It's hard to reference it in this timeline.
Right. Of course.
And I'm so scared to talk now that I'm just going to comment in the chat. So good point, Hammy.
I think Emily was going to comment as well after me, and then we can go back.
I mean, my comment is just that I'm very easily pleased because I'm just like space puppies, and was just like entranced because he's just playing with the little wolves.
That's the best. Space puppies, Lindo, amazing.
Now. This reference, no one has mentioned. Charlie Ashby is on it. He knows the Star Wars lore. He says, I thought it was a really cool nod that this planet was the same one from the beginning of 1977 Star Wars.
What?
Now Hammy,
and I had no idea.
You're a pretty new fan, Hammy, so you might not have picked up on that. But
no,
I
did not.
It's good we've got, like, keepers of the lore, like Charlie Ashby in the UK. That,
watch your back, Pablo Hidalgo.
Timothy's got a good sequel trilogy reference for you. Amazing hair.
True. It's true.
The,
sometimes even both suns shine on a womp rat's tail.
Yeah.
Oh, I loved that. Yeah.
That's don't say that one three times fast. Mitch, this is something that this is your wheelhouse. And that is going back and reminiscing and retelling and seeing the dramatic effects of that Battle of Endor.
I love this. I love this so much. Because we had talked about on Battlefront, like, can we show, like, people watching this on TV or on the, whatever the internet is and start, like, Holovitz, people probably see this. But I didn't know, like, we never were sure, like, did they get footage or are they broadcasting it as propaganda? Is it on the news? We had no idea. I love that we're seeing this, just, like, normies out in the Star Wars universe seeing the Death Star explode and just being psyched.
I don't know, there was something about, it was just so... Well done. And just such a fun, good little quick surprise.
Yeah.
And also, which I think is very important, and I feel like sometimes the movies have sort of forgotten about it, but it lets people know where this is.
Yeah.
Like when this is happening in the timeline. You can instantly, if you're sort of just clicked on it and you're like, oh, okay, so this is after Return of the Jedi. Also when Cobb says...
The second one.
Yeah, I thought he meant.
Yeah, I love that he clarified.
Underscores it, right?
At home.
Yeah. Well, it felt like a snarky Twitter comment to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I was into because I am into snarky Twitter comments.
But it was nice also getting to see the bar scene because it was kind of getting to see local people. They're not the heroes of the galaxy, right? It's just everyday people who are, and then of course the consequences for them of the Empire's fall is that they're immediately taken over by the mining. Was it mining guild or mining?
I think it was the local miners.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, they have like an organization though.
Timothy Oliphant, Raylan Givens in a non-mining town. It's not possible.
You got to write it in. Yeah, it's law.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a guild, Hammy. It was something like, it was some form of club. They had a name where it was like, hey, we mine and we're together. I'm pretty sure it was a mining guild. Practice. Okay. Braxton is there.
Weequay's place really was the Mos Pelgo version of Cheers, wasn't it? Where everybody knows your name.
Now, the next scene where they come face to face with the Tuskens and we are...
That was a mining collective. That's what it was.
Oh, it was collective.
Collective.
Yeah, Matt pulls it out.
That sounds more... They sound more hippie than a guild. You know, we're a collective, man. We're just trying to dig up some rocks.
We're a mining co-op, okay?
Yeah. While we take over this bar, we're peacefully taking over.
They're certainly not there because they can shoot straight.
Yeah.
Well, they have terrible masks that don't let them see anything.
There was that sort of bit of like, he's got the suit on. So now he can shoot four people before they turn around. Like, it did give you that special. I'm glad he got shot once. Mm-hmm. So at least the suit. Because otherwise it was like, hey, mate, you could have walked in there like 3 weeks ago and done that. But that one shot.
So when he walked in, did you guys get the impression that everyone thought he was Boba Fett?
Yeah, because everyone was kind of scared automatically. I wasn't sure if it was that they knew he was Boba Fett or just a Mandalorian. Like, just seeing the armor would... Mm-hmm. Make them scared, but they definitely were scared as soon as he walked in.
Well, it was silhouette, right? It freaked me out.
Yeah.
It's a Mandalorian that's just woken up. He's just out of bed. Shh. Now, Corey.
Yeah.
There's something special in this scene, something we've all been waiting for. Whereabouts is this?
I think it's actually past the scene. It's where they're looking at the crate dragon for the first time.
Oh, okay. So it's still... Okay. All right. Well, there's some good sizzle. There's something coming up that's very exciting. Yeah. Very exciting.
Definitely worth for it.
So, they meet with the Tuskens. And again, what this show has done for Tuskens... Wasn't a big Tusken fan. Kind of annoying, you know? But how they've sort of delved into their culture and sort of, I don't know, sort of explained their side without, like, ruining the mystique is quite exceptional. What's your Tusken Raider rating, Emily?
I'm very pro Tusken Raider. I've loved that we've gotten more of them. It's sort of incredible that we have, but I really like the place that they fit into on this show. I like that we've gotten their language. I love how much of it is sign based. I think that's just a really cool inclusion to the show. And also, like, it really, really, like, draws a line under, you know, like, how easily we've seen characters murder them before.
And yeah, I like it when someone does something bad, but then there's an explanation. Like, do you know what I mean? They're not bad people. They're just like doing. They've got to protect their little Tusken babies, and they're
the way Mando explained it. He's like, yes, they're brutal.
Yeah,
but they also would have a right to live.
Mm-hmm. And I think they mentioned the water as well when Cobb was taking the drink of water, and the Tusken translates through Mando saying, "Oh, well, you took their water, so now you will refuse a drink from them."
Yes,
I was like, "Ooh,
it's spot on, right? It's really that great acknowledgement, you know. Just like Jawas need their Mudhorn egg, so the Tuskens are surviving in a land we assume they're indigenous to, and absolutely have just made it go. But these people have arrived from wherever they arrived from and disturbed their whole way. So there's that great friction that's gone on, and we've only ever seen them up until now, up until the Mandalorian, be the bad guys. And here we are, understanding that actually there's obviously a deep and rich culture connected to who they are and why they live and all of that sort of stuff. It's not that they're just out there. They are brutal people, but they live in a brutal place. You walk away from home, you're going to be dead in a couple of days. It's done.
Oh, no, that line, it's like, it was something like, they are brutal, but so's the Dune Sea. Or something. Oh, yeah. It was just like, I felt like going to get a tattoo after that. I felt tough just hearing such a line. But it does, you know, it does clarify what we've all known. That Klieg Lars, he's the real. Oh no, actually not Klieg. He's a hero. Owen Lars, villain. Oh. Charlie Ashbury, he's saying the whole family. Beru, oh my God, Beru. I can't even think about Beru Lars anymore.
I mean, the Nexium cult really did her in, that's for sure.
Oh my God, that was this is a great segue, you guys, because that, I'm talking about The Vow, it's on HBO. It has the most harrowing, worst Star Wars reference of all time in it. But we will transfer to possibly the most feather-touched, best Star Wars reference ever. Here we go. We don't need it mentioned. We don't need it pointed out. We don't need, like, Cobb straying next to, like, Din and him saying no single file. We've got to show a shot of him walking across the desert. Let's put him in a single file. So a bunch of cashed up nerdy morons stare at the screen. No offense, everyone. I'm speaking for myself, except for the cashed up bit. I just cheered. It's a Star Wars reference. It's
just like in the movie.
Just like
a Star Wars reference in a Star Wars TV series. Who would have thunk it?
Dude, so good.
I have to imagine, like, part of me thinks a lot of this Tusken stuff is backdoor, like, warm-up for Kenobi. Like, he has to be doing a lot more of this stuff. Like, he does it in the novel, like the Kenobi novel. He's in Thick as Thieves with the Tuskens, and he speaks their language. And I have to imagine this is going to be kind of just prepping you, like, they're not all terrible. They're not just mindless monsters. They're people. They have a society.
Well, I think what's interesting about that is I remember, I think it was it's still a Legend storyline where the Tuskens brought in somebody, and it was, Arshard Hutt? Is that how you say his name? He was a Jedi, a fallen Jedi after Order 66, who survived. And I guess he didn't really know what to do with his life. And the Tuskens brought him in, and he became a Tusken Raider, like Jedi Sith, kind of in the middle. But I do wonder if they would ever, like, explore a storyline like that again, because you could easily do something like that in Kenobi, where you have this antagonist Tusken Raider who's also a Jedi, who could be a problem. So it does feel like a setup for something, though.
Yeah, I love when people are like, okay, this is fine, but no more Tatooine. And then you've got Ben Kenobi waiting with his series, just going, sorry, dude, we're going back.
Yeah.
We're doing 6 limited episodes.
Because you know they're not going to leave.
Yeah. Well, Mitch, you're winning me over because you're making Tatooine a lot more palatable for someone who is kind of tired of Tatooine after December.
I'm the same way, but I'm also so damn excited for this.
No, but I love that, though, that there could be building backstory for future storytelling. So that's great.
So, Hammy, I don't want to bring up any wounds, but as the sequel trilogy fan that you are, does going back to Tatooine, does that bring up some bad final minutes of Star Wars movie memories?
Yeah, it does. I'll be honest. It does. Yeah. There's a whole side of fandom that's not very happy, but that's okay. I mean, it's they'll do something for that side of fandom at some point.
To be honest, I was disappointed with The Rise of Skywalker, and The Mandalorian has, it's like that Bacta spray that they spray on Din's head. That's what it did to my little Star Wars heart. Now I feel like I'm, after this episode, I'm just like, I'm back to full strength.
That's good.
I'm back to The Force Awakens level Star Wars, man.
Ooh, like, come on.
Now, Corey.
Mm-hmm.
The next scene with the Tuskens and our little Boba gang that we're going to look at is them at the mouth of the cave. And the Star Wars fandom has been just on tender hooks about the return of the one, the only, our boy, your boy, my boy, Toro Calican. Now, Emily, he's very close to you. I hope that's okay. I hope you don't mind about that. But We've got a Toro reference in this scene.
Explain yourself.
Would you care to take us through this glorious moment in the Star Wars canon?
Yeah. Okay, so in Chapter 5 last year, we got that scene where Toro and Din are talking to the first, or rather doing the sign language to the first Tusken Raider. And Din gives the Tusken Raider Toro's binoculars. In this episode, you see the Tusken Raiders constantly going through this binocular with Mando and with other Tusken Raiders. And I put it together on my second rewatch. I just started laughing because I just thought about Steel. And I was like, he's going to lose it when I tell him. But yeah, there's your Toro Calican reference right there. That's his binocular still working. And so you know, he's still alive in a way through the Tusken Raiders. So
now every Thursday, except for all the days that Corey's busy, which is quite a few, and some days he has to do it to a different day, but almost every Thursday, hardly any Thursdays, me and Corey get together and I try to trawl the internet for as many Toro Calican references as possible. And it's a great segment, very popular, sweeping the nation, the world, called Toro Watch. Now, normally I sing the theme song because
we're not there yet, Steele. Oh no, we're not there yet. You haven't converted me fully.
No, this is the deal, buddy. If you bring the Toro reference, you have to sing the song. That's how it goes. So, okay, are you ready to do it?
The rules.
I know the first sentence of the song.
Where's
it's
Noah?
It's like 2 sentences long. What are you talking about?
Yeah, Emily hates the segment, and she even knows.
I just know the Toro watches in the song. I try drowning it out every time you sing it, so I don't know exactly How's school? Where's Noah? He's not here right now. So
okay, so I'll give you the words, right? It's Toro Watch. What a bounty hunter. Toro Watch, handsome guy. And then when the watch appears, you go, Toro Watch.
I hate this. All right, let's go.
Hey, buddy, I'm not the one that brought the Toro Watch. And it's a pun because they're looking through it. Wow. Like, so we're watching them watch through Toro's watching device.
You are going to use this for quite some time. Yeah.
Oh, that's ring theory at its finest.
You just buried yourself, Corey.
Wow.
You're in trouble, man.
For life.
All right. Are you ready, Corey? You ready, buddy?
Toro Watch, best bounty hunter. Toro Watch, handsome guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay. Let's go.
Toro Watch, best bounty hunter. Toro Watch, handsome guy. Toro Watch.
Nailed it. Timing is perfect.
Oh, the stock at the end is the bit that kills me the most. That's so good.
I know this seems weird to everyone else, but to me is that is amazing. Thank you, Corey.
Welcome.
Kieran says there was not enough heart in that rendition.
Really?
God, he's gone real American Idol, Simon Cowell on you. You probably have a similar accent as well. Do you want to give it another shot, or are you happy with that one?
No, I do not. Enjoy that first clip forever until I inevitably... I don't know if you guys know about this, but Steele and I, last week, I promised him if Toro returns in the season, I will get a tattoo of Toro Watch for sure. So I was anxious throughout the first episode because the minute that we saw Amy Sedaris' character, I was like, oh, okay. And then when he got on the speeder bike and it was Tatooine, I just started going, is it possible that... I'm going to get tattoo after this episode or
it's that kind of energy, Corey, that just builds into your anticipation for the whole ep.
Oh yeah. Well now the whole season, I'm thinking it's a possibility.
I want Toro to come back. So.
Yeah. Now suddenly we all are invested in Toro.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure John Favreau is watching and went, hey, that's a great idea. I really should have done that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Dude, I'm just saying, he might be back next week. They're still on Tatooine. Now, Corey, I'm going to blow your mind.
Okay.
So, you know how I love merch and stuff, like T-shirts and stickers and all that stuff?
Right.
All right. So, because Toro Watch has been such a success, I decided to take the brand and develop... You're not going to believe this. I've partnered up with some random company and we have developed the Toro Watch Company. there's an actual brand of Toro watches on the market. Check this out. Look, there's a watch and you click. It's got Toro on it. It's a Toro watch. That we're looking at during this Toro watch.
What?
Jesus. Does it get more meta?
Whoa. And Emily, you're not left out because there's a lovely woman's line of Toro watches as well. So I know you're a big fan of the segment. $130 bucks down to 90. So, and Matthew Moll. Handsome watch. Yeah. Good reference. Good reference. So why am I actually tempted by that watch? This has to be a joke. It is not. It is just the internet at its best. Thank you very much, everyone.
Wow. It's interesting.
Oh, my God.
Are you ready to get copyright strikes now? Because there's a Toro watch brand?
That would be... I'd take it. I think they'd, unlike, Disney and Lucasfilm, I feel like they'd embrace the fandom.
Yeah, I smell a partnership opportunity.
Yeah, that'd be more than happy.
Great now, opportunity for the license.
Then, good use of the license.
Good use of the license.
Then we get to the Krayt Dragon's lair. And R.I.P. the Tusken. The Krayt, he didn't even end up eating the Bantha.
I was so worried the entire time.
Where is this giant dude? Oh, how did we miss the track? Ah, and then the when they were
not to scale,
doing the scale, that sounded like your like Wolfpack live stream, Corey, with everyone complaining about the scale of toys and stuff. Excellent reaction. I love in any film or television when they set up a little like makeshift diorama to show what's going to go down. And I didn't feel like their plan lived up to the diorama of opportunities. I'm not sure what pouring extra rocks down really does in the end to your strategy, but it did make for a pretty sweet joke.
I think that we have to accept the wheels had fallen off at that point, right? Like it was very, the whole episode, even this bit, especially underscored, it felt very Magnificent Seven, except that with, you know, Mando and the child rolling into town, it's really like Magnificent 1.1. I enjoyed the fact that they were bringing everyone together. We all have to work together to solve this problem. and in a very Star Wars kind of payoff, the only things that the Tusken want is the carcass.
Yes, yes. And, oh, what a carcass. Now, I always like to acknowledge the, you know, you've got the stars, but the background actors are always putting in. Check this dude. Old, like, whoever's playing Shovel Guy with goggles earned his SAG dues or whatever that month. Check this guy out. Look at him.
Ferocity, so dude. Much emotion. No lines, emotion. That's all he's got.
He is just ready to shovel a Tusken in the head.
Yeah, but he has to go through Timothy the Elephant to get there.
Yeah, so that's not going to happen.
You're not going to get... You need a shovel to get through that haircut, I tell you that much. Beyond the Blast Doors... A great podcast network. They want to know, anyone curious how a Krayt Dragon kills a Sarlacc? Because that concept is stuck in my head. I think it's in the new you, but did not the sail barge end up killing the Sarlacc? Is that new or old new?
Don't know.
I don't think it did.
But... Okay.
No.
I assumed it was just that the Krayt Dragon like chomped onto.
Yeah, I understand. Krayt Dragon eats under sand.
Yeah. I actually would love to see that scene.
How the Krayt destroys the Sarlacc.
Yeah. Well, I mean, unless Boba just went ham on it, that's definitely possible.
Oh, I suspect that was his exit strategy, right?
I mean, how did he get out? I guess that's the big question, right?
Kanata, a good story for another time.
Exactly.
But is that time this season? Like, Hammy, you bring up a good point. Imagine a flashback of Boba. Because remember, you know, way back in the podcast, Malk and Emily will probably remember this, Our buddy Justin Hamilton would always talk about what he wanted to see in Disney Star Wars was the Sarlacc pit and then the hand coming out as he, you know, it's Boba Fett dragging himself out. This is sort of like the thrilling thing, how we, you know, we saw the Death Star blow up on TV. Are we going to get a look back from Boba Fett to things that happened, like... Are we going to get Boba Fett perspective, Return of the Jedi era goings on flashback? Because, I feel like I should go apologize to my wife now at the possibility of that happening and me screaming about 12:45.
Look, if anybody's going to come out with some daddy issues, it's going to be Boba Fett, right? He's had a lot of time in the Sarlacc stomachs to work through the fact that as a child, he saw his father get beheaded. He went into a life of bounty hunting. He thought he had his nemesis captured, ended up falling into the Sarlacc pit because of him. And then in some way, somehow, he and his armor have become separate. He's got a lot of stuff to work through, man. I mean, there's not a counselor on Tatooine that can help that guy out.
But imagine,
I think it's kind of foreshadowed a little bit, right? Because we saw Mando go into the belly of the beast, right? So will we see that again? Will we see it? Is that foreshadowing what we're going to see later with Boba? I don't know if that's really necessary. And maybe it's that we already saw it happen, so we don't need to see it one for one with Boba. But yeah.
All of this piled on top of the marshal saying, "Well, I hope our paths cross again."
Yeah,
so we have at least one more Tatooine episode this
season.
Yeah,
for sure.
What's interesting is one of the guy who does the sign language for the Tusken Raider said today on Twitter that he's going to have a season 3 episode. So I think that kind of confirms that we are going to go back to Tatooine again.
Ooh. Interesting. Sex Wedge has super chatted us with, "Remember the Banthas that sacrificed their lives in this episode."
Is there anything greater than bomb Banthas, though? Like, I love Banthas. I was so sad to see them go. Didn't want that one to get chomped. But strap a bunch of bombs to them.
Oh my God.
It's a recipe for comedy.
Wow.
I know. When it tried to run away and poor Mando's like on the leash, like holding on to him.
I liked, I'm just trying to pause it on the exact spot because I was so, I so fanned out at, you know, the tradition of the Tusken Raiders and the single file, you know, this age old tradition. And then just like that, It's wherever they want to go. It's, yeah, you know what I mean?
We're out here.
When the crate dragon's coming up, it's whatever goes. It's whatever goes. Yeah. All righty. No sweat. Sorry. Then the crate dragon comes out, eats a bunch of things. It's to-ing and fro-ing. And to me, just one of the messed up, oh, I've got to bring up Starship Troopers gets a big nod with the acid spit, which I feel like in these COVID days, that's how we treat everyone's spit these days. Not that I used to like lick up people's spit last year or anything like that, but now more than ever, it's a daunting thing. And just seeing like, you know, the giant bug, you know, or the crate dragon, but like Starship Troopers, and then get exploded from the inside. I was like, I don't know. There's something about a giant creature getting exploded from the inside that will win me over. Mitch, you seem passionate about this topic.
I just loved that shot of, and yeah, it's like, it's such a cool, like, snake dinosaur. And again, I didn't want any harm to come to any of the animals. But again, it's a lot of bombs. And the shockwave of that thing exploding is just such a like a wonderful shot that I didn't expect. It made it feel really big in a way that I wasn't expecting. And I also just love that Mando walks away from all this. He's like, "Yeah, sure, I'll take this like pot roast on the back of my bike right on. Let's go."
Yes!
So good. The minute that he lands and turns and it's all still sort of dust settling behind him, and all you see is him walking away going, "Yeah, no, I got this." Like, the whole thing is in a mess. He's cool. And yeah, that's right. Almost the next shot we see is, "Here's a chunk of meat on the back of my bike." Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah. When he goes to, when it goes to this shot and Din sort of working out a plan, he's like, and they show him with all the bombs, the Bantha with all the bombs. It's like, okay. I don't think he's going to take the time to take them off. I thought that was.
Yeah. Well, what was funny is there was a scene where, the Mandalorians, like when the Krayt Dragon's coming up for the first time, he tells the Bantha, he's like, "It's going to be okay." Well, he's got bombs strapped to him. I'm like, well, in like 2 seconds, it's not going to be okay. It's quite literally going to blow up.
That's right.
Very sad.
I The whole thing, and with both of them jetpacking, I just felt like I was reading like a Dark Horse comic. Yeah. And it was just a great, just say like shaking up Star Wars, and it's all there. And when he made, you know, talk about how much I love a Return of the Jedi reference. When he like made Boba Fett's, you know, but it was Cobb's jetpack, like go off by just hitting the side of it.
Look after the kid.
Yeah. I was like, no, don't do that.
I thought that was the best.
Is this like
what's
a
interesting
known
is that like Baby Yoda didn't really do much this episode, but I thought that was kind of interesting too, because there were all these close-ups of the baby watching all this happening. So I'm wondering if we're going to see some more dark side from Baby Yoda, because he's seeing all of this violence and it's getting pretty normalized for him. Yeah. So I don't know. I just thought about that. And
he jumped into the spittoon. Remember, he was standing in the bar by the shade, and we cut to him afterwards, and just this little baby, you know, the little child head popped up out of the spittoon. It's like, man, there's some nasty stuff.
That I just realized it's a spittoon because you said that.
Yeah.
Before,
yeah,
I
yeah.
was like, it's a
clean
bucket.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just after I spoke out against spit. That's
nappy change on all four things. Diaper change.
Now,
I love that Cobb calls him on, like, that you're just doing all this stuff in front of this little baby.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, because it started with the prologue, right? He sees the wrestling match and, oh, this is no place to bring a child. Mm. It's just kind of interesting because he's going to teach Baby Yoda right and wrong when it comes to the Force.
I now think you're onto something, Hammy, not just like, oh, it'd be interesting if the baby seeing the violence being normalized. Like, I genuinely think, because there's enough references in this episode, that I do think you're onto something.
Yeah, because they did a lot of close-ups of the baby watching, and that's all he does. Whereas in the first season, we get a lot of the baby actually doing stuff, right? So he was very quiet this episode.
And I think that's like such a good, you know, how, you know, Hammy brings that up and then Mitch is jumping onto it. It's such a good thing about this show in that they've earned the right for us to take little things that are said and go, oh, hey, they might be setting that up for something later on.
Yeah.
Which makes watching a TV series and, you know, making 87 hours of content about it, like, so much more enriching when it's not just like random splatterings and, you know, people say stuff and it's never sort of referenced again. I just like, I have such like a confidence in the show to like, yeah, you just do your thing. I might not like the idea of it, but let's see how you do it. And then you end up with shots.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Like this bad boy, if I can get it up. Bang.
Yeah, so good.
Like
a fun callback to the premiere as well, the season one premiere, when he's like jolting the walrus off of his ship. It's like, I genuinely forgot he had this as a tool in his toolbox. So it's a fun way to bring it back.
Yeah, that was so dope. Then as we talked about at the top of the episode, we get the return of Boba Fett.
What a great touch, honestly, from Jon Favreau and the casting and like the whole mob behind the Mandalorian to go, we need someone to play this character. Let's get Timmy Ware Morrison. Let's get the guy who played Jango Fett, because Bob is a clone of Jango. Let's get him to be the guy. That's so great. And such a great fan kind of hat tip. To say, oh no, this is a deep cut. You'll be in on this.
Yeah, I don't know how I'd deal with it if it wasn't him.
Yeah, we wouldn't know who it was. If it was literally any other actor, we'd be like, what was that finale? What is that epilogue? Mm. We have no idea.
He's the dude in whiteface,
We would have thought that it was Boba Fett at all.
Yeah, because I wouldn't have liked if it wasn't him.
Yeah. I think even from a diversity perspective, I think a lot of fans would have been really disappointed if it wasn't him.
100%.
And also because of the nature of his character, and like we've seen what he grows up to look like. There's a whole movie about this guy grows up to look like these dudes. So I'm sure they could get, you know, another actor to sort of a Maori actor that sort of suited it, like looked a bit like him, but to have him back, like he also seems like a super sweet guy. So it's always cool to sort of welcome back these actors that have sort of done the right thing by Star Wars all these years. And, you know, they're not on the Graham Norton show wondering what character they played in one of the biggest motion pictures of all time. No offense to Keira Knightley. I probably wouldn't have remembered it either if I was her. But Bob is back. It's just tremendous. I'm just so happy for our friend Hawes.
Oh yeah.
We've had many Boba near misses. Let's head to the wrap up because we've got some crew that have to bail. We might I'll stick around anyway and do some questions in the chat. Anyone that wants to do that can do that. But let's go around the board. I'm not sure if everyone would be in the same order as me. So let's start with Steve Mulk. What is your score out of, Emily, should we do it out of 5 or out of 10?
10.
All right, out of 10, Emily has adjudicated. This is an insight into our, whenever I've got a question in my life, it's just, Emily, should I do this? And she's,
Linda, right there.
Right with me. So we want a score out of 10, some final thoughts. Where do you reckon it's going?
A spectacular launch for season 2. I think this sets up a whole great new bunch of questions across the series. And we know there's other stuff coming that really only got touched on either in the recap or that we know is coming because we paid attention. So there's some brilliant other stories to play into this. So it was just a brilliant touch. We didn't have to overplay the child's force powers. He was a passenger for the whole episode. That was really nice. I am 1,000% in. This gets a solid 9.95 out of 10 from Mulk.
Excellent. Mitch, where you at?
A little bit lower. I'm thinking like an 8 out of 10. It's a great episode. It's, for me, I was surprised how interested I was, how engaged I was with a lot of the subjects and the familiar characters and things that I wasn't at all looking forward to. Hammy, I think you kind of saved it for me right at the end, because my biggest criticism of this episode is that it didn't really seem to matter. It was a lot of fun, but it didn't really kind of contribute to the overall quest and the reuniting of the child with his people and this the whole premise of this season, right? So,
Mitch, we have to remember.
Yes, Theo.
People complained about that episode 5, The Gunslinger, that it didn't add to it.
Toro Watch.
We never left Toro Watch.
No. I'm not Toro watching. But see how, like, I'm not even talking about Toro Watch, and you guys have just found out about it, and you're like tapping your hand. Let's do a Toro Watch. Corey wants to sing it again. It's fantastic. Hammy's sort of wishing she got into Marvel instead.
No, I don't.
We would understand. 100%
do not wish I got into Marvel. No offense to Marvel fans.
But I trust them that it's going to weave into, like, do you know what I mean? Like, the first season, you know, you had, like, you know, Kuel and IG-11 and Cara Dune, and people were like, oh, they were good, but, you know, it was too bad we didn't get more of them, whatever. And then in the last few episodes, they all A-teamed together. And so I have confidence.
I have faith.
That we're going to get some more payoffs. And, of course, you know, we've got Boba. But there is a question for you in the chat from Kieran Mitch. He says, Mitch, I would have loved to see Shriv and Zay in episode 9. How would you feel if Shriv and Iden were in an upcoming episode of Mando? If you got, Mitch, the Windegg treatment, and you got one of your characters bang up there on the sweet streaming services of Bobby Iger.
I think I would literally black out. Like, I just gone. I wouldn't know what to do because I don't, if it's happening, I don't know. So that would be a delightful surprise to just see these characters that we had co-created on Battlefront for a game showing up on a TV show. Like, the timeline's right. I think it's great. I think Shriv's a great fit. I think personality-wise, he fits in with a lot of this cast. Great idea.
What if Shriv has teamed up with a vengeful Toro Calican, and he's
how dare you? I will say, I do think that duo would be amazing.
Thank you,
because Shriv much. Would hate him.
Well, there's yep. got to be one. There's got to be one. And what was your score, Mitch? Out of 10?
An 8. An 8. A great 8. Episode.
Okay, let's go to Emily.
I think I'm probably also around an 8, maybe an 8.5. This episode was a lot of fun. I think I've been so excited since we heard rumors that Timothy Oliphant was going to be on, and he was perfect. And I like that they already brought in Boba Fett just to sort of, like, even if we don't see him again for a couple episodes, to, like, just cutting that anticipation, I think is good. Yeah. I'm still slightly concerned about this season in terms of how I'm going to feel, like, when we see Cara Dune and Gina Carano again. That's sort of hanging heavy over the season for me. But this episode, like, purely on this, it was a fun start back. I love this show. There was all sorts of, like, cool little bits. The Banthas were awesome, and just lots of little baby Yoda. I'm happy.
Excellent. And what was your score out of 10, Emily?
8.
8. Corey Van Dyke. It says 9 on your beanie, in case you didn't know.
thank you.
What do you give it out of 10, and what are your final thoughts, my man?
Yeah, I think I'd give it an 8 as well. I think the biggest payoff in recent history of bringing Boba Fett back into the story is just super exciting. Bringing somebody as awesome as Tamora Morrison back from the prequels is just, like, again, it's a dream. And what I'm really loving about Mando, and this episode really proved it, is how much they're willing to incorporate everything into this show. The books, the comics, the shows, yeah. all of the films. It's everything into one. And, you know, I am kind of on the thinking that I don't want to see Tatooine too much again either. Like, I'm fine with it being a Kenobi.
I'm influencing everyone. I'm such a bad influence.
But, like, I'm this honestly was the best Tatooine story we've ever gotten, I think. So it made it worth it. And I'm ready to move on from it. And I think just one thing to point out real quickly that I thought of last night was, I think this episode also confirms that it was Boba who was by Finnick's body at yep. the end of the last season, or the chapter 5. So I think this is just, it's a massive tease at what's to come. And I think that's what I loved about it so much, is it's a great setup episode. And it was Jon Favreau did a phenomenal job.
Yeah. And it's so soothing that, like, there's all this stuff to come.
Yeah.
And it's planned.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean? They might chop and change as they go, but it's like,
it's laid out. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, now.
And big ups to Jon Favreau. This is his first directing.
Directing.
Oh, and he nailed it. That aspect ratio. Smashed it out of the
park. Oh, yeah. I noticed that too. That was so cool.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Hey, Corey, I don't know much about Jon Favreau. Has he been involved in any Disney movies at all?
Yeah, well, if you don't know, you can check out the Disney Gallery. He'll tell you. He'll tell you exactly what you know. I don't know if you knew, but there's this old director named Kurosawa too. You'll know that Jon Favreau loved Kurosawa.
I I know Corey so well, I can play him like one of those pull cord toys. Now, Hammy, before we get your up score, I don't mean to trigger you, but this rock in my hand.
Oh, no.
It is, it is actually from Tatooine.
From Tunisia?
Okay. Well, no, it's from Death Valley.
Even better.
Because I've got it set up. I recreate the Blu-ray scene where George CGI'd in a rock. So I have it set up with R2-D2. And I think it's like ironic that it's like a practical rock doing the effect. So I didn't mean to trigger you there, but I just wanted to say that we are in the presence of actual Tatooine parts. So tread carefully with your abuse. Keep your swearing to a minimum. And give us a score out of 10 and your final thoughts, buddy.
Okay. I didn't think of it as triggering, but that you are guilting me with that rock right there. No. I mean, my score will be the lowest, but it's a 7 out of 10. I'll be nice about it. I thought it was a good setup. Obviously, technical wise, I think Jon Favreau did an amazing job. The shots of the landscapes, I noticed the aspect ratio as well. It's beautiful. It's a beautifully made show. All of the creatures, everything was amazing. All of that is always A+, A+. From a story perspective, obviously, as a newer fan, we want new things, and so it's hard to keep going back to the well, the same old well. But as long as the story is going somewhere and they're building towards something and they know what they want to say at the end of all this, that 7 could become a 10, you know, by the end. So it's just, I am very harsh. Sorry. I guarantee there's more people who are harsher than I am from looking at it. But it's just hard as a newer fan to feel that same nostalgia and those feelings, because yeah, I can say I know all those people and I read all the books, you know, for the past 2.5 years, but it's just not the same as wanting an original kind of story.
I think your review clinically is like your score is probably the right one, because we're scoring on, like, I'm scoring on my childhood.
I'm over here ruining it. Like,
No, not at all. But when you're like,
it's all emotion for me. Yeah,
when you're critiquing it, you're like, you know, you didn't give it a 4. You said like 7, and it's like, oh, it's the first episode of the series. It's, you know, it sort of, in a way, didn't really push forward, you know, what the story is, that, you know, there's no Moff Gideon in it. You know, there was not much Baby Yoda. There was no backstory about Baby Yoda, Yoju, if you will. So I kind of feel like your score is the correct, like the clinical score. Yours is the best one. And that's sort of interesting, because it is like, we're also hepped up on reference sugar, that like other people that don't have that might be like, what's everyone going on about? This show sucks. Do you know what I mean?
No. I don't think it's, you know, it's never that kind of feeling. I think I don't want to speak for every single sequel trilogy fan that's out there, but it never feels that way. I'm sure it's how prequel fans felt, where it's like, do we get our turn yet to get something?
Well, there was plenty of prequel hugs.
Yes, I did appreciate that. That's what bumped it up to a 7. It was referencing the prequels as well.
Yeah, if J.J. Abrams was watching that episode, he would have basically thought it was a remake of The Phantom Menace compared to what he did to it. Now, I'm going to go the other way, Hammy.
I know. That's cool. We balance each other out in the Force. It's good.
But my score is, it's totally, like, it's so unclinical. I'm going, I don't want to do half, but I'll have to go 9. Because I had so much fun. And I left the episode like going, like, just so fulfilled, and just like, not that like, oh, they should have shown Boba Fett in this episode. I was just like, that was awesome. Can't wait for next week. Like, and that's like that's all. I just want Star Wars to make me feel like 12 for an hour, have a ball. And then I can go back to, you know, like, doing adult things. And so, like, I'm not going to say it's like The Godfather or, do you know what I mean? And I'm not going to dispute. I think Hammy's review, like, score is probably the right one. But as far as like my, like, just enjoyment, it was just, yeah, I was so fulfilled as a Star Wars fan. I didn't feel like an idiot for being a Star Wars fan. I felt like all the things that I'd read had got, you know, there was like little trinkets of that, all the things that I grew up loving when I was a little boy, there's stuff like that in it. I found out things that I didn't want to know that I found fascinating. So I didn't know how much I wanted to see two little Boba Fett's jetpack around a giant lizard. Like I was like, ah, oh, this is fantastic. So I'm going with the 9, but Hammy, I respect your score.
Oh no, no, that's okay. The episode had tons of surprises, and it was definitely I think even going into the first season of Mandalorian, I'm sure everyone expected it to be a straightforward bounty hunter show, right? And then they threw us with Baby Yoda, and oh, okay, he's suddenly a much more endearing character and taking care of a child, and that changes the whole dynamic. It's not just a ruthless bounty hunter who, wins every single time. So I think the show is going somewhere, and that's my hope for it. So no, I totally get what you're saying, and I think this episode with Timothy Oliphant, that was a nice surprise. All of those things, I think, point in the right direction for the show.
Yeah, I definitely, like, in the sizzle for season one, the thing missing from the sizzle was that the show had heart, and that was because they had to keep the heart of the show, you know, like, which was Yoju, if you will.
A secret, yeah.
Yeah, so it was sort of like when I was watching, you know, at Celebration and stuff, I was like, yeah, it's going to be good. Like, it's just like a Mandalorian doing tough things. Like, I watch it. But then to get that, like, that it had such heart and that it had the Force was just such a beautiful thing. Now, let's just, some of us do have to run off to real life. So let's run around the circle. Malk, where can the good people of the internet track you down?
I'm at Steve Malk everywhere. That's important on the social media. Thank you so much for having me on here, Steele. Been so much fun. Love this.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on, Malk. And if you're in Australia or interested in Australian TV, TV Black Box is a podcast I listen to. I think it's every Monday or maybe it's Tuesday because of the time delay, but awesome insight into the Australian television industry. Mitch Dyer. Do you have any video games? Do you get a bit of bunts off those video game sales or what? Where the kids?
Oh, the kids not. Yeah, I'm rolling in money off those game sales. Oh yeah, that's my life. No, but I would strongly recommend people go play Star Wars Squadrons. The game is awesome. I'm so proud of it. I'm so happy with it.
Congratulations!
Thank you. Phenomenal. Thank you. Honestly, like I've been playing it like. To play like 60 hours in a month, like just playing with my friends because I genuinely enjoy it. I'm having a great time with it. Loving seeing people's feedback and thoughts on characters and story and plot points and references and Easter eggs and all the stuff we snuck in. And now I'm just as excited about the Mando content as everyone else because I haven't seen that stuff yet.
Excellent. All right, you guys do have to bail. So thanks so much. It was a real treat.
Thank you for having me.
It was great catching up with both you mates, and I'll talk to you soon.
And lovely to meet everybody else.
Yeah, yes. Nice to meet you guys.
Bye. Have a good night, y'all.
Don't give him a moment, Lindo.
Hammy, let the good people of the internet know where they can track you down.
Well, now that I've rained on everyone's parade. No.
Hammy, let's clear something up. Well,
I think Hammy's right. Like, I actually am definitely of the mindset of no more Tatooine. Like, I literally, me and my buddy Ross MGF Customs talk all the time about how it's time for a fresh take. It's time to move on.
That's all you guys talk about.
It is. Yeah.
I won't drone on about it. It's okay.
I don't think you're droning on. I think like what you're saying, like that perspective from someone that isn't like fanning out, you know, because they heard single file when they were four. So when you see it, do you know what I mean? Decades later, it's like a big thing. I think that perspective is really good. And if they just focus the show on like me, horrible. Like I feel like The Rise of Skywalker was like made for me, but not me, like someone that I was friends with at school or something. And it didn't work out that well, I don't think. Like, should be
no comment from me.
But, I, you don't have to, I thought you brought a, a good insight, Hammy. So no downers. I thought your seven was on the money. If I was sane, I'd probably give it a seven as well. But I'm not. They walked in a single file. Did you see that?
And yeah, I did. I did love the Banthas.
It's a reference from the movie.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, okay.
Until tonight. So, but you know what? I do want the Bantha plushie that's for sale at Target now. So, ooh,
yeah, that's how they draw you in.
Yeah, that's how they get my money. So.
Yeah. Does it come with a toothbrush?
No, I don't think it does. But that's okay. I'll brush his teeth.
Where can the good people of the internet track you down on Twitter and podcast?
Thank you, Steele. Well, first, let me say thank you for having me on. Thank you for welcoming a new perspective, a newer fan. I appreciate it. And everyone tonight for giving me the chance to talk about it. But if you want to follow me, I'm on Twitter at Balance Padawan. I'm also part of the What the Force community. It's whattheforce.ca. We put out articles every Tuesday and Thursday. And most of us are sequel trilogy fans. So if you want a kind of different perspective or idea on Star Wars and how we're talking about it, you can come and check out all those articles. But yeah, thank you, Steele. Thank you, guys. It was so nice meeting you.
All right, Hammy. Yeah, we'd love to have you back. And also, if you want to hear more me and Hammy, I'm not sure what episode it was, but we did an episode about Hammy's was it a year into your Star Wars fandom?
It was a year ago now, and then a year into my Star Wars journey. And we talked about how I became a Star Wars fan. I binged all the movies in a week, and then I walked in and saw The Last Jedi. And everything changed. Cool. Yeah.
That's so cool. So awesome. All right, Hammy. Thanks so much. I'll see you on the internet, buddy.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good night.
Cool. We may as well do all the pogs now, Corey.
Okay. You can follow me at Corey_Wolfpack on Twitter, but you can also follow me and Noah Outlaw at KR Transmissions and Kessel Run Transmissions on YouTube, where we're putting out a bunch of Mandalorian content. And there's just so much exciting things in the future going on with Star Wars. So definitely check us out there, and you can see everything we do.
Excellent. Emily?
I am on Twitter at EF Lind. I do a podcast with my friend Brittany Brown called The Cantabite Dispatch. We have a lot of fun on that. And I also do a podcast about Vin Diesel called The Fan and the Furious. And I would appreciate people checking that out, because it's a lot of fun and it is really dumb, but I love it.
Can you do an episode on a song?
Oh, we did. We recorded one today.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm hyped for that.
On what?
He's released two songs now.
Yes.
Oh, so you did say song.
Yes.
Yes.
He's a singer as well as an actor.
Ah, I heard song, but I was like, no, that must have been.
Your brain didn't accept the fact that he had released a song.
Wow. That's like,
yeah.
God, they could go on tour with Russell Crowe and his 40-odd foods. What is it? 40-odd feet of grunt or whatever that pod was. Hey, shout out to Catherine Neen with the super sticker. I'm not even sure what super sticker means, but is that a type of super chat, Corey?
I think so.
Excellent. All right.
Well, if you look on the little, it has a little, like, if you see it in the chat, there's a little thanks heart.
So
For some reason, it didn't show up when you pull it up there.
Oh, because I'm watching it on the StreamYard.
Oh yeah,
like the thing. Hey, this is
got you.
Thank you, Catherine. This is a common thing for me, because apparently, if you like, I've seen screen caps. If you like a hashtag Mandalorian tweet on Twitter,
yes,
you get a Yoju. I'm getting a red heart.
Yeah, they're probably disabled it now.
I didn't get a Yoju.
Yeah, it's anytime there's hashtag Mandalorian, if you liked it, little baby Yoju came on the screen. It's pretty cool. But yeah, they probably disabled it by now.
Okay. All right, Braxton says mine wouldn't do it, but someone sent me a screen grab of it. Now, Corey.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here in the series? What's your prediction?
Okay, so I'm pretty sure I know where we're at in the next episode. I do think we're going to go to the water planet in the next episode, based on the episode description. So,
where are you getting these episode descriptions?
Yeah, right. It's a good question.
Wow,
that was a big time in there, man.
That is, oh my god.
I could see like the first maybe. I don't know if we're getting Tatooine next week, if I'm being honest with you. I think we might be saving Boba for later in the season.
Okay.
But I think one thing that's super exciting to me about this episode was the fact that now it's real, right? Now all those rumors that were going around and everything that that Hollywood Reporter has been hearing and you know, Slash Film and stuff we've heard, now we know it's happening, like, without a doubt. And this just makes me so excited, thinking, oh my god, it's only a matter of time until we see Ahsoka and Bo-Katan. And how are those characters going to appear? And how is Mando going to find them? And, you know, you were long speculating that there would be a big moment in the first episode. So, obviously, being Boba and Cobb Vanth. So, it just gets me excited about week to week, thinking what big lore moments are we going to get now? Because now that we know they're willing to put in things that, like, you know, the sequel trilogy didn't, for example, we're going to get a lot of those references. I just can't wait to see where it goes from here. And I'm ready for Moff Gideon. I know Emily and I are Moff Gideon stands. So, yes. Emily, you're going to have to come on Kessel Run as soon as we get some Moff Gideon action.
Oh, man, I'm so ready to get his backstory.
Yes.
Oh,
actually, and I do think that the twist of the finale will be everything looks okay for our heroes and Baby Yoda safe. And then Boba Fett takes Baby Yoda to Moff Gideon and gets his bounty and becomes, again, the best bounty hunter in the galaxy.
Wow.
Throwing that out there.
Knocking Toro off his perch.
Yes, deal.
Kieran says, Corey, so no Boba next episode. We haven't seen the shot where people first claim they saw the armor on the speeder.
Yeah.
Now, to that, I would say that, like, that could have been a shot in, like, not a different edit. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure if you've heard of this film called Rogue One. But the trailer, this TIE fighter and... I don't know. They used to just have playtime at 15 minutes before knockoff or something.
Well, actually, you know, one thing they could do is open up the next episode as he's getting to the Razor Crest on Tatooine.
Hmm.
And you could see Boba maybe trailing him. And then you could, you know, see him take off. Because maybe, for all we know, maybe next week's episode has to do with, you know, the ice planet. And he crashes there. And it's, you know, we see him take off. No, probably not. No. So we'll see.
What about this? What are the chances of a space battle between the Razor Crest and the Slave One?
I would say later in the season. It's pretty high. I would say that the Slave One...
Oh, wait there. I almost called you whores. Sorry. I just gotta put the scoop thing up. Keep going, Corey. Keep going. Talk to me.
Yeah, I would say, you'll probably see the Slave One in the season.
Really?
That's right.
Okay, we're gonna have to have a pretty good explanation for that, though, considering how quickly, like, the Razor Crest got stripped by scavengers, that if we see, like, the Slave Run flying around, I need to know exactly how that happened.
Well, yeah. Boba Fett's going to hide his Slave One better than Din.
I'm surprised the Krayt Dragon hasn't eaten it by now, if it's just, like, somewhere on Tatooine parked.
You are obsessed with the Krayt Dragon's eating.
I am. I love it. I just feel like he's constantly eating and constantly eating stuff we love, so...
Now, Oh, Timothy was actually saying as well, I'm holding out for the Slave One Razor Crest dogfight. I agree with David Lozano on this one. after chapter 9, and Corey touched on this, it feels like all possibilities are in play.
Yep.
Like that's what's so exciting is, you know, it used to be like, oh, as if they'd do that from like Clone Wars or whatever. But now it's just like, these dudes are nuts. They're going to throw anything in. Like the fact that they threw in the Cobb Vanth thing from Aftermath.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
so good. Like,
wait, Corey, what season were you going to see Gallius Rex? When's he coming back?
Honestly, who knows, right? They were setting him up to be quite the character.
Oh, man. What a. I begrudge his existence because he was just there to be like, I'm not Snoke.
Yeah, right.
But I could be.
Mm-hmm.
I know someone who I feel like that killed their Star Wars fandom. That bait and switch. They were just sort of after that, they were just like, bleh. I was so invested in that being Snoke. So.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're referring to.
Alrighty, guys. Thank you so much for hanging with us. Thanks to everyone in the chat. It was super fun. Make sure you algorithm it up. And I think this episode's gone on
long enough.
I love it.
I'm glad that Emily broke during that. I was like, if she remains stone-faced against the timing that I had to go to look like I wasn't clicking something. I had to cue it up while I was like vamping. It was so hard. Do you know what I mean? I just don't want it to look like I'm
grasping for straws.
It looks.
I just want to make it natural.
What gets me is not the clip itself. It's the big grin on your face as you do it. That's what makes me laugh.
You know, what's funny is when Steele was doing the Torah watches initially when we first did this like a couple months ago, my first thought was there's no way I will ever be converted. And now every time I see Toro, I'm slowly like going, hey, man, like this makes Steele happy. It's starting to make me kind of happy.
Look at him. Oh, yeah. Toro watch. See, everyone loves it. Everyone loves it. Thank you, everyone. Leidra says that was magical, Steel. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. And we'll be back. What day is it today? Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. This will be up on the podcast feed tomorrow. Good sizzle. To be a patron, $3 a month. And we've got a new show. This episode, I loved it so much. I invented a new podcast, Corey.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't even wait to tell the person who does the podcast with me. I just rang Hawes with my phone up to the microphone with it recording, and I said, hey, Hawes, we're doing a new Patreon-exclusive podcast. It's called Hawes Calls, and it's where I call you after The Mandalorian. It's now. So get going. And it was meant to be like 5 minutes and we did like half an hour and it's just giddy. What about what? Any form of like it's frothy.
That's not a very flattering impression of Hawes.
Oh, that was me. That was me. So checking that out. Hey, David, I know. It's been a long wait.
I'm wondering about that too. Yeah.
When are you making Toro merch, Steel? Just wait up. Just wait up. How do I do it justice? Do you know what I mean? Like it's there's a lot of pressure on me there. But thanks so much, everyone. I had a ton of fun, and you guys all rule. Check out Kessel Run like I'm doing on my YouTube for all their reactions. And I made a spectacular cameo while I was walking to the supermarket yesterday, calling in on the feed. And Brittany and Emily will be breaking it down on the Canto Bite Dispatch, one of my fave podcasts. Aww. Thanks to everyone for joining in. Thanks, Emily. for that little noise, acknowledging that I can be forgiven for all my tomfoolery around Toro. And I'll see you on Monday for the live stream, everyone. And May, hey, Corey, you coming back on Thursday?
I will be here this Thursday, yes.
100%. Excellent, excellent. And may that force be with you. Algorithms, guys, algorithms. I can't stress this enough. Algorithms. Just...
100%.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.